Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Because we so do love our on-demand listeners, for a long time now we've had a way for our on-demand listeners, well, for any of our listeners, but especially our on-demand listeners, to participate in the program, albeit with somewhat of a delay. We know that you listen on delay. We know that you're listening a week or 2 weeks behind sometimes, depending on your schedule and your ability to listen. And we know that you still want to comment, you still want a question, and you still want a chance to interact with the show. That's why we have the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. There for you 24/7, anytime, day or night, for your question, comment, show suggestion, or criticism. And we're going to listen to a couple comments here and see what we have to say about it. A comment from our series last week. We were doing a series on biblical archaeology with Dr. Craig Evans, and one of the installments had to do, I believe, with literacy in the ancient Near East world.
This is Paul in Milwaukee calling about the valuable Wednesday, April 25th program on literacy in ancient times. I, for one, was impressed by the new indications of widespread ability to read and write in the Roman world. Regarding the discussion of indirect evidence of Jesus' literacy, isn't John 8 clear witness from Scripture itself, the source of all truth, that Jesus wrote, not drew or scribbled, not just once, but twice? The Concordia Study Bible offers that his writing in the incident of the woman caught in adultery was akin to a judgment in a court of law. Thanks for listening.
It's a great example. It's one that Dr. Craig Evans actually brought up. Now, the caveat on that particular John passage is that that section, if you look at it in your English translation, is often set aside in brackets or in italics or something to indicate that there is a pretty broad swath of verses right there that are not original to most of the most ancient manuscripts of John. That's the woman caught in adultery incident. Now, there's no reason, the reason it still appears up in the body of the text is because it's consistent with John's way of writing. It seems to be of the same origin as the rest of John's gospel, but it just doesn't appear as an episode in enough manuscripts to make it questionable. I don't think it's questionable whether it actually took place. The best explanation I've ever heard is this has to do with transmission and with copying of manuscripts, not with whether or not this event actually happened. Because it's consistent with John's theology, it's consistent with John's style, it's consistent with everything that we have in the Gospel of John, but it tends to not be there in enough manuscripts. Now, that's a reason, that's why Dr. Evans issued that caveat, because it says there is an explicit example of Jesus writing. Illiterate people don't write. And he does. And whatever it is he's writing, which the gospel writer does not tell us, is clear enough to his audience, his immediate audience there, and this would be the scribes and the Pharisees who have brought this woman caught in adultery to him, that they all leave. We assume they leave because what he's writing there are words of condemnation, setting up his final verdict, he who is without sin cast the first stone, where are your accusers, then go and sin no more. So there's an example of Jesus himself writing. Now, the other thing that Dr. Evans pointed out with regard to Jesus' literacy in particular is that there is no indication that he wasn't literate. There's every indication that he was. Is there a passage that says Jesus sat down and read this? No. There's the synagogue passage early in his ministry where part of the scroll is read by him, by someone else. It doesn't say. And then he preaches on it. Now, unless Jesus is possessed of some sort of, what shall we say, phonographic memory, where if he hears something, he knows it, humanly speaking, It's far more reasonable an explanation that his encyclopedic knowledge of the Old Testament is the product of his regular study of the texts. He's referred to as rabbi, which is shorthand for someone who knows his stuff and is respected enough to be considered a teacher in his own right. The scribes and the Pharisees initially, in all four Gospels, to one degree or another, considered Jesus a peer, a colleague. They even referred to him as teacher, which is that's something far more than just you seem to know something. That is a person who has authority in the subject upon which he speaks. And that in first century Palestine would have required the man to know the texts. They would never have called anyone teacher who they knew to be illiterate, who couldn't handle the texts. So I just think the case against Jesus being illiterate is a slam dunk. It's airtight. With regard to the disciples, it may be a little easier to make the case that some of them may have been illiterate or functionally literate at the most. Remember, I use the example we're talking with Dr. Evans. I can read biblical Greek. I can read it. I cannot compose in it. I cannot speak it. If you'd listen to me speak it, I sound like a two-year-old sounding out words. Because it's a one-way literacy. I can read, but I cannot compose. I can understand, but I cannot compose. And I think that may have been the level of literacy that prevailed among the general population in Jesus' time. But given the fact that the disciples, some of them appear to be writing disciples, writing apostles, they were obviously as literate as their teacher was. They also would have been well acquainted with Scripture, especially St. Paul and the other ones who have epistles attributed to them.
This is Herman calling May 1st to comment on the presentation by James White of Alpha and Omega Ministries today on the matter of the anti-bullying speaker, bullying Christians in a sense, and propounding also a superficial, if not erroneous, view of Scripture. I would say that at the conclusion, in response to Pastor Wilkins' question, James White had an excellent answer about the God-given plan and otherness of male and female, that to love across that line of otherness is to love the other and not an image of yourself. James White made an excellent presentation on that, and also about the shorter lifespan of the homosexuals, among other problems that go on in those venues in addition to shorter lifespan, what the anti-bullying message is hiding from these young people is that it is part of a propounding of relational chaos that's not going to do them any good, and it is the exact opposite in the Bible and Christianity, that we do not have relational chaos, but we have the order of creation and salvation in Jesus Christ, who is the bridegroom for his church and redemption, and has that model of relationship that is there for us and also given directly by word and sacrament. So that's the tragedy of the anti-bullying message. It's covering up a popularization of relational chaos that is spread among the younger set today, and that's what it's covering up in a tragic way. But James White made an excellent presentation and answer at the final conclusion. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought that was very valuable in our conversation with James White, because what he's reflecting there is something that you'll probably often hear on Issues, etc. We need to think more deeply about, in a sense, the rationale. What James called it was the created purpose behind male and female. This isn't just some kind of random choice that God made. He has something in mind when he creates them male and female. Now, we dare not think, well, we're dealing here with just kind of biological necessity. Of course he made them male and female, because how else would you have procreation? We need to understand that procreation is God's idea. he could have achieved it by other means, but there's a reason why there is this sexual duality in creation, male and female in the human, in among humans, but also generally in the rest of creation. Now, it has to do with what God, what the purpose of that created order ultimately is, which is to show us small scale a picture of Christ and his church. This is what Paul tells us in Ephesians 5, that the man and the woman together as husband and wife are a small scale picture of the greater reality that God would reveal for redemption through Christ and his church. That Christ will love the church and give himself for her and wash her and make her spotless that he might have a bride for himself. And he goes on to talk about husbands and wives and says, this is what I'm talking about is Christ and his church. Now, for an excellent exposition of this kind of sexual duality in terms of just kind of pure social science, not non-theological, but social science, Dr. Robert Gagnon's been a regular guest on this program. If you search our website through the Google engine there, Gagnon, G-A-G-N-O-N, you will find some excellent conversations we've had on that more in depth. And I thank you very much for your comments. Here's an email that we received Easter Sunday from one of our regular guests. Thanks for being a blessing in my life, especially today. Got home from sunrise service and breakfast with my husband. No company, no Easter feast, no home Bible study. Just a wonderful Southern California sunny beach day celebrating the Lord's resurrection. That freedom is something new to me. This year, because of my health limitations, we skipped our usual Easter feast providing. But part of the way through that peaceful day, I just yearned for more great Easter hymns. My body may have been resting, but my heart was longing to soar, so I hit my computer music channel, Live 365 came up first, and there was Lutheran Public Radio with just the hymns I was looking for. Thank you for completely fulfilling my Easter celebration. The Lord is good. And that's signed Gretchen Passantino, a regular guest here on Issues Etc. You can listen to Lutheran Public Radio as well 24/7 through the 50 days of Easter. It's there for you any time of day or night. It's absolutely free. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. All through the Easter season. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Pastor David Peterson about Christ the Good Shepherd. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
They Were Afraid, an Easter sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
For to proclaim the resurrection of Jesus, an empty tomb, is not good news, not for sinners, apart from his death for sinners.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon and an Ascension sermon for any size gift during the 50 days of Easter. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support during the Easter season.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.